Welcome to the Inventory Nation podcast, a show designed to bring you the incredible voices and stories of veterinary professionals coast to coast, all while helping you to manage and control your inventory. I'm your host, Nicole Claussen, coach, advisor, and champion for veterinary teams and their inventory. Joining you live from the mountains of Montana, welcome to the show. Hello, welcome back to the Inventory Nation podcast. I am so very excited that you're here, as always, tuning in for this week's episode. So lately, I've been getting a lot of different questions about pricing and, you know, how can we make sure that we're strategically pricing? How do we make sure that we are, you know, looking at our revenue appropriately? How are we looking at our costs appropriately? So within that theme, I am so excited to introduce you to today's guest. Lindsay McMacken is joining us, and Lindsay brings with her 22 years of experience in the veterinary industry. She managed a practice in the upstate of South Carolina for 15 years and has been consulting since 2015. Lindsay's passion is to come alongside existing staff and teach them the whys and hows, so each team member is empowered to realize his or her full potential. The insight she has gained from working diverse roles in a clinical setting allows her to develop practical and individualized business plans that meet the client's needs. Welcome to the show, Lindsay. I'm so glad you're here.
Great. I'm glad to be here as well. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to sharing a little bit of what I know.
Yeah, of course. It's absolutely my pleasure. So tell us your story. How did you get started in vet med?
Sure. So I started out in a practice actually in July of 2000. This is my anniversary month.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So I was actually in college working toward a bachelor's in early childhood education, but there was a little something in me that was thinking, maybe I want to be a veterinarian. So I applied for a position at the practice that I wound up managing and got hired on as a receptionist. I quickly learned that I didn't want to be a veterinarian, but I loved working in the practice. And so I worked as a receptionist, was trained as an assistant, and then became the practice manager in 2004 and managed that practice for a little over 10 years after that. And then toward the end of managing that practice, I had started a group for veterinary practice managers to meet locally in our area of upstate of South Carolina. And was really enjoying networking and providing a networking forum for that group, and realized that I loved helping other practices, and that passion just kind of ignited there, and then was able to phase out of my practice and start my own consulting firm in January of 2015. So that kind of brings me up to where I'm at now.
That is so fun. I love like hearing stories of like how other people's passion just totally got ignited and it was something totally different than what you thought was going to happen. Yep.
I did finish my degree in early childhood education, and I used to joke with people that managing an animal hospital was sometimes a lot like managing a kindergarten classroom in terms of some conflict resolution and a little bit of learning how to share and and teaching new skills making bulletin boards. Those were always fun. So so I used to joke about that, but I did then go back eventually get my master's in business a few years later. So
yeah, I could definitely see the parallels in that for sure. I know, like if you were to ask me when I was younger, like, oh, like, did you think you were going to end up being an inventory consultant? I would have like been like, no, what are you talking about?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So let's kind of dive into talking about some challenges that you see a lot of times with practices and their pricing. So kind of like in your experience, what are some of the challenges you've noticed that practices make in regards to maybe pricing and inventory management in general?
Okay. So in practicing with inventory management, I think there's a lot of struggles around, obviously around being competitive in terms of with the big online pharmacies that are out there and maintaining that competitiveness and trying to drive that inventory revenue through your own practice and not losing that revenue. I think one thing that I work with mostly is actually pricing with services so that if you are strategically pricing your services well, then you can be more competitive in the inventory realm. So if you have a good handle on how your services are priced, then the inventory part kind of falls into place. I don't know if that makes sense.
It totally does, because I think, you know, sometimes we're so focused on, oh my gosh, I have to make sure that my inventory is priced well and I'm competitive and worrying about low markups there. But if our services like are priced well enough and strategically, then it's like, oh, we don't have to worry like as much, right, about being like hyper competitive with our inventory, because ideally, you know, that's kind of what we're there for, is to provide services anyway. And it's funny, I was actually talking with, an earlier podcast guest, and we were talking about the same thing, whereas a lot of services are kind of like priced on gut feeling rather than like data and information. And it's kind of like, oh, I wonder what, you know, ABC Hospital down the street is charging. And it's like, no, wait a second. You actually have to like know and understand your overhead costs and your labor costs and all that before you like jump right into pricing. So.
Exactly. And that's what I help practices do in terms of looking at their pricing. So helping them get away from that across the board pricing increases, you know, not knowing where their losses are happening, helping them find where that loss is in terms of individual services, you know, kind of getting rid of that kind of willy-nilly price increases where, you know, you just kind of pull prices out of your head. yeah. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, I bought the practice and this is what the prices were, and I've just been making price increases ever since. Instead of strategically figuring out those costs of providing that service and understanding the cost of providing that service so that you then can strategically price accordingly to your costs. So, and a little bit of watching the amount of discounting that is happening.
Yes.
Is a big struggle that's out there, I think, too.
Yes. Discounts are so huge. And, you know, sometimes they will be like routed differently. So like the doctor then gets their full production on it, and then it's also discounted on top of it. So then it's like you are like, then the practice is paying like full production on that service, but then it's discounted. So yes, I definitely see discounts come into play in a big way.
Yes, very much so.
So as far as like pricing goes and services go and everything like that, where can you, oh, and actually, before I even ask this question, I was just like thinking about this for a second. You know, when do you like have a practice and you purchase it, right? And you just kind of then mark up those prices off of the old ones, if that makes sense, then it's like you're never really evaluating your current situation. And then, so if it's like, if it kind of started off maybe not strategic or not in the best way, you're just kind of like perpetuating that and kicking the can down the road.
Exactly. And I love working with startups or newly acquired practices and helping them figure out that strategic pricing. So,
yeah.
So they're not continuing to probably or possibly bad pricing structure. So,
Yes. And I like, so like in Avamark, you can, you know, when you right click an item, you can see the price increases. And it's always interesting to me, you know, when you look at it, it's like, oh, last price increase was 2005.
So, yeah.
Like, maybe we should look at that.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, so when was your last, when did you last, you know, increase your prices? And they're like, well, I kind of do a few here or there. And, or it's been a couple years, and I get all kinds of answers there. So, or we did, you know, or some people are very structured and they do, you know, X percent across the board, which is good to some extent, because you got to keep up with inflation. But if you don't know which services are losing money, you may not have increased that price enough to offset the cost of providing that service. And so that's what we look at. And then there may be services that are already generating a great revenue and profit for you that you don't actually need to necessarily increase the price on.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So then what kind of like reports and information do you think that practices should review on a regular basis, even kind of see, you know, where their pricing is at and what is kind of like going on there?
Sure. So I like looking at, well, obviously, so I do bookkeeping too. My husband and I do bookkeeping services for veterinary practices. So obviously you want to look at profit and loss statement, balance sheet, other financial statements to stay on top of those numbers there and learn how to understand and interpret those numbers. Sometimes just looking at them and if you don't know what you're looking at, then having someone who understands the numbers and understands the business, and the veterinary field, is a good place to start. So you can get educated on what those numbers mean. But in terms of, other reports to review on a regular basis, I like looking at reports that show you your top services. So mm-hmm. If you can generate a report and look at, you know, your top 80 to 100 services that you're providing most frequently and focus on those in terms of price adjustments, that's what we look at. That's a great place to start because that's what's generating the majority of your revenue and profit. You don't want to look at services that you're doing, you know, 5 or 10 times a year. You want to look at, so what I see is the most provided service is going to be exams. And those are actually loss leaders in our industry. So if what we are providing at the highest frequency is a loss in our industry, then it makes sense that we need to make sure that we're pricing other services strategically and offsetting that loss. So it's very rare that I see a practice that's actually profiting with their exams. Usually they're at a loss of like 100%, 150%. So it's really important to look at your other services that you're providing and make sure that those are priced accordingly. And I'm also very mindful of price shopped items. So we are very strategic in terms of not looking at exams and vaccines that people call in and ask those prices. We want to make sure those maintain competitiveness. It's the other non-shopped items for like sick patient visits and things like that. So,
mm-hmm. That totally makes sense. And we kind of like, you know, when I talk about inventory, we talk about, you know, the Pareto's law, you know, it's like 20% of your, you know, inventory generates 80% of your revenue. And it's kind of the same for services. So if it's like, if you have something where, you know, you kind of want to focus on that 20%, because that's the stuff that moves the needle the most.
Exactly.
It's kind of like for services, like the analogy is we don't want to like look at our cotton balls and tongue depressors. We want to look at like the big movers and shakers.
Exactly. Exactly. And then other reports, obviously ahead. Your inventory reports would be important. And I don't want to, I always refer to you when it comes to inventory questions.
Thank you.
like, have you ever heard of Nicole? I follow her on Facebook and LinkedIn, and she's the inventory guru, and you need to follow her. And so that that's definitely where I refer to in terms of when it comes to inventory and pricing and structure there.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. So that is so cool that you're also, so you and her husband are also a bookkeeper team as well.
Yes.
That's amazing.
My husband's more of the behind the scenes work. We kind of joke that he's the all work and I'm the all talk part of. he's very detail oriented really into the numbers and just the transactions and the coding and categorizing transactions and making sure everything's in the right place. And we transition or convert practices over to the AHA chart of accounts when we take them on as a client. Mm-hmm. And if they're not already following that, if they are already following that, usually there's still a little bit of cleanup that we do on their books. Then I'll have a monthly meeting with our clients, and that's more of where I come into play, where we look at the numbers and we talk about cost of goods sold percentage and employee expense percentages and where those are falling in terms of benchmarks. We talk about reasons though why a practice may be an outlier outside of those benchmarks. I always say benchmarks are a good thing to use as a guide, but they're not set in stone. It's not something you have to hardcore, you know, just because someone says we need cost of good to be 20% or less, doesn't mean we have to be there, because maybe they have a really big, maybe they sell a lot of food, and that's not going to yield the same percent or markup and things like that. So we definitely look at why they may be outliers, and we do strategic planning and budgeting and discussions and things like that in terms of with our bookkeeping services.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was, you know, it's like, it's important to compare apples to apples and not apples to octopus, especially when it comes to benchmarking.
Yes, very much so. No, just in my experience with working with practices over the past several years, it kind of became, so in what I do with pricing services, I do a lot of financial analysis, and I became aware that there was a big need for veterinary specific bookkeeping. Because a lot of the practices I would work with, they have a bookkeeper, but their bookkeeper doesn't really understand the ins and outs of the practice and doesn't understand really the numbers that they're inputting into their books each month. So it just kind of blossomed out of that in terms of that niche of veterinary specific bookkeeping. We know the ins and outs of running a veterinary practice and how that translates onto income statements. I actually don't see how a general bookkeeper could properly code transactions. Especially if you're following an AHA chart of accounts, there's just so many, if you're trying to be really true to the books, I don't see how they can properly code that if they don't have a good understanding of the business in terms of where different, expenses go, but that's just my opinion. So,
yeah, I feel like it would be very hard because there's like so many little like nuanced things. So yeah, I can imagine, you know, having like a veterinary exclusive bookkeeper and accountant would be so important in that aspect, because it's like, you know, there's just so many little things. It would be hard for me to picture somebody like outside of vet med really kind of like understanding like all the nuances and the pharmaceuticals and the labs and all the things that go into COGS and not, and you know.
Exactly. Yep. Yep, exactly.
Totally makes sense. Yeah. So let's talk about pricing. So what are kind of some tips that you have for practices who are wanting to improve their pricing strategy, or if they're listening and they're like, Oh, that sounds like me. It's been a while since I've updated my prices. What kind of recommendations do you have for them?
Well, I would say, you know, establish a plan. And if they need help with planning, I do contract work for a service called Profit Solver. So it's definitely tip number one, I would say, would be to look into Profit Solver and see if that's a service that could help with your pricing in terms of strategic pricing strategy. If that's not an option, then in terms of tips, would be to have a plan. How often are we going to make price adjustments on our services and our inventory? What are we doing across the board? Are we going to look at top services? Are we going to call around and price shop other practices? So create a strategy. I recommend looking at top services and focusing on those in terms of doing a cost analysis as best you can in terms of thinking about, you know, how many people are involved with the service. Like, let's take placing an IV catheter, for example. You know, you think, oh, I'm just grabbing supplies, sticking in a catheter and taping it up, but it's really more involved. If you think about it, you've got at least two people. You've got one person that's going to retrieve, restrain, position that patient. The other person's getting out all your materials. Then we're going to shave the leg, scrub your leg, place your catheter, put in your plug, tape it in place, flush it, make sure it's working properly. Then we're going to put some vet wrap around it, so hopefully they don't chew it out later. And then that probably took about 10 minutes of two people's time on average. When you kind of weed out the ones that were really easy versus the really difficult IV catheter placements that maybe took you two or three attempts. When you think about, wow, two techs or a tech and assistant or two assistants placing an IV catheter, and then you've got the materials. And then you're thinking about boiling down to some portion of some overhead costs in terms of the keeping the lights, power and water running at the practice. You know, when you boil down all of that cost, you know, what does it really truly cost to place that IV catheter? And if you're only charging, you know, $30-$35 to place an IV catheter, you're probably losing money every time you place an IV catheter. So just doing some kind of sitting down, looking at those top services and that, in that analysis way. And that's what we do when we work with clients with pricing strategies. We walk them through time motion studies, talk about cost and things like that so that they know what it costs to deliver individual services and help them price those services strategically so they profit a certain amount on each individual service to yield then a overall profit goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely right. Because it kind of goes back to that thing of, you know, making sure that you're not pricing the same as, you know, the practice down the street, because I mean, minus for shopped items, because it's like,
right,
you don't know their facilities costs, you don't know their labor costs. It's really kind of, that is so unique practice by practice that, you know, it's kind of helpful information to have.
Exactly. And you don't know, and using the phrase comparing apples to apples or apples to oranges, you don't know what their standard of care is either and their protocols mm-hmm. and procedures. So maybe at your practice, when you provide a dental cleaning, you have one person that's doing and scaling and polishing and charting, and maybe you have a second technician that's monitoring the patient while they're under anesthesia. But that practice down the road that maybe is $200 or $300 cheaper than you, maybe they only have one technician that's doing everything. They're doing the scaling, polishing, cleaning, and charting. They're also monitoring that patient under anesthesia. There's no right or wrong way. It's just a different standard of care, but that cost is very different. Mm-hmm. Same thing for if someone's price shopping a euthanasia. Well, what's your standard of care for euthanasia? Are we placing an IV catheter and doing sedation protocol prior to the euthanasia solution? Or are we just doing medications, you know, off the needle, you know, without an IV catheter and things like that? So there's a lot of things to think about when you are, you know, if you are using a price shop method of pricing, are you comparing apples to apples? You know, in terms of that standard of care could be very different than your practice.
Yeah.
And pricing accordingly to that.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I see questions about that like all the time, like, oh, what are you pricing on this and what are you pricing on that? So definitely helpful. And, you know, the AHA fee reference guide, one of the things that I noticed is the, like, the median income for the area is fairly low. Like, I think it tops out at maybe like 75,000, but there's a lot of communities where the median income is well over $120,000. So it's like, you know, you want to use, I feel like, unique information and not just, you know, I feel like you want to like look at your unique hospital rather than just kind of blindly going with maybe what somebody suggests or says.
Exactly. I tell clients all the time, you know, your practice, you know, your clients, mm-hmm. your clientele, you know, who you're reaching out to, who you're marketing to, who's coming through your doors. You also know the clients that you want to have in your practice.
Yes.
And that's very important too. You know, what are the types of clients that you're wanting to attract to your practice? Are you wanting to be maybe higher cost, lower volume? Are you wanting to be lower cost, higher volume? Again, there's no right or wrong way to that. It's just what do you want your structure to be and who are you trying to reach and market to? And then basing your pricing strategy on that.
Yeah. Makes so much sense. So, another question that I get asked a lot. So what are you, or what are your thoughts on strategies for maybe a recession action plan or when we kind of get a little bit, unsure about kind of what the future is going to look like?
Yeah, no, that is a great question. Thought about that for a while. And I think there's a few bullet points for that one. One would be being really mindful of your budget. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have one, create a budget. There's easy tools to use to get a budget set up and to at least get started. And then you can tweak it as you go and get familiar with using a budget. You can tweak it. And it's usually always ever evolving anyway, your budget
yeah.
is. It's kind of a rolling or working document that's always changing, but being mindful of staying within your budget, but also reevaluating expenses to prevent overspending in terms of that budget. I think another key point would be paying down outstanding debt. So mm-hmm. being mindful of the debt that the practice has, and maybe paying down that debt so you have a better cash flow, would definitely help you in a recession. Cause in a recession, if your revenue drops down and you've got all of this debt, you know, you've got to pay that debt, but you've also got to pay your people that are working there. And so numbers get hard. With paying down that debt, kind of beefing up your emergency fund too. So having an account where there's emergency funds set aside, so maybe enough to pay, you know, at least like maybe 3 months, 2 or 3 months of expenses for the practice. And that may sound out of reach for some practices, but that's definitely a goal to get to. Maybe just start having at least enough to pay a couple payrolls in your emergency fund mm-hmm. so that if something happened, you know, you can at least get your people paid so you can keep the doors open. Let's see here. I know another area is to think about where you can expand. Are there any other are there some services that you could offer in your practice that you're not currently offering? Is there are there team members that have a passion for behavior, and you could offer some behavioral type classes? Or do you have a doctor that's been really into looking at acupuncture or something like that, and you wanted to start offering acupuncture? Those are low cost ways to expand your services where it's not involving buying a piece of equipment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then when times are slow, building your team's skills is another thing to focus on. You know, hey, can we focus on being more efficient with the team that we have? Are there technician skills that we need to build? You know, are all three of my doctors in the practice always reading your analysis when we've got, you know, licensed technicians that could read your analysis that we need to hand that over, and we just will use this time to make sure that they are properly trained in doing that and move forward that way. So we kind of switch off that way in terms of our efficiencies and our workflow, different things like that. So just, you know, is there a way to beef up the skills during a slow time? So those would be some different things that I would put into a recession action plan.
Yeah. Sure. Those are all really great ideas, and I am always a big fan of training and streamlining operations. So love that.
Yep.
So me too.
It costs a lot more for a doctor to do services than it does for your team to do them.
So. Yes. It's like, let doctors go be doctors and utilize your team.
Yes, very much so.
Because it's kind of like, you know, you think about it, it's like you wouldn't really have a doctor answering the phone, probably, unless it was like the ultimate last resort. So it's like, why not rely, you know, make sure that you are utilizing the rest of your team to their fullest potential and capabilities? Because one of the things that I love about like working with a lot of different people in vet med is like seeing everyone's like zone of genius and all the things that like they're really great at. And so if it's like, I see so many people who like are just fantastic at so many different things. And it's like, we can just like build on that and like help them grow and thrive. And then doctors be doctors, you know?
Exactly. I love working with practices and kind of somewhat interviewing staff members and finding they kind of open up somewhat to strangers a little bit and telling you, you know, oh, I'm passionate about X, Y, and Z, and learning about that with a practice and being able to help them foster that and grow that, build on that potential that's there. Again, kind of my slogan or my passion is coming alongside the practices and helping them realize their potential. And part of that is finding out those passions that each of the individual components have, and how can they put that together as a team and build and grow and make their practice prosperous.
Yeah. Makes so much sense. I love it. So if people want to learn more about you, they're like, oh, you know what? I feel like I need to work with Lindsay. Where can they learn more about you?
Sure. Well, I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook. So you can find me either at Lindsay McMakin on LinkedIn and Facebook and message me there, or they can find me through McMakin Veterinary Consulting Services on LinkedIn and Facebook. We do have a website, but it's being overhauled, so it's currently under construction. So it's not going to tell you much. If you go to mcmakinconsulting.com, you won't see much there. So LinkedIn and Facebook is definitely the best way to find me. I don't know. Would you, at the end of the podcast, do you give out my contact information, or is that something that...
So I'll link it in the show notes. So if anyone's listening and you want to learn more about Lindsay, I'll link it in the show notes so that you can find it very easily.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I really appreciate it. And it was such a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, thank you very much. It was an honor to be part of the show and enjoyed our conversation.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Inventory Nation podcast and spending your time with me. I know your time is valuable and in short supply, so it truly is an honor. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe or leave a review. Be sure to visit vetlogic.co/podcast to access the show notes and discover additional links and resources. See you next time.